let me start by thanking the three organizers for the invitation to come to this interesting workshop. It's always a pleasure to be at Perimeter. So I have decided to, just for a break, this morning, to take it to another kind of filter, not quantum gravity, and talk about gravitational waves. But I promise I'm going to finish my talk about quantum gravity, and then that would be a nice and smooth way to look stock that I believe is in quantum gravity. Or well, it's not. So what I would like to do in the next 40 minutes or so, I would like to use gravitational waves like Swiss knife or Swiss Army knife, as you call it in the States. I was a bit skeptical whether I would be allowed to pass the border if I declared it. And I would like to show how you can use gravitational waves in order to learn about astrophysics, about compact binary objects, how you can learn things about observational cosmology, large scale structure, about beyond the lambda CDA model, the phenomenological model, in order to explain the current data that we have from the universe, how you could even constrain modified gravity models, which are kind of infrared corrections to gravitational theory, so that you can explain the late-time accelerated expansion of the universe. And at the end, I'm going to say how also you could probably constrain some quantum gravity proposals. So we had the other day a nice talk about gravitational waves. So let me give you my perspective, which actually does not really overlap with what you said the other day, but complements what you said there. So, as you know, from the first and the second observing runs of LIGO, we have data that confirm detection of gravitational waves from 10 binary black hole systems and 1 binary neutron star. Of course, there are more other kind of candidates we have now, but of course, I cannot make any kind of statement about that. Probably we saw it here. What did we learn out of that? We learned many things. For instance, about black holes, we learned that they could be more massive than what we could expect. Now, these are isolated bursts, very loud individual events that you can see. Let's call it C. But in addition, in the same way like the universe is filled with electromagnetic radiation, the relic of the hot Big Bang that we see in our antennas, we expect that the universe is filled with a stochastic background of gravitational waves. From sources which are far, they are weak, our kind of interferometers cannot resolve them. So this is the definition of the stochastic background of gravitational waves that could have either an astrophysical or a cosmological origin. Astrophysical, binary, supernova, neutron star, cosmological, inflation, cosmic strings, cosmological phase transitions. So depending on what is the amplitude and what the strain, as we call it, and what is the frequency, you have a different kind of experiment to detect. So what I'm going to talk today, I'm going to focus on interferometers on the ground, like video collaboration, and I highlight as well about forecast for LISA, which means that in my example, for the case of a background of stochastic gravitational waves from an astrophysical origin, I'm going to consider the case of binaries, BBH, BNS, and for case of a cosmological origin, I'm going to consider the case of cosmic strings. Now, if you do a kind of a back of the envelope calculation, from the data that we already have from the second and first running, you could expect about 1 binary neutron star merger every 13 seconds and 1 binary black hole every 250 seconds. I can reassure you that we don't see them. Why? Because they are very faint to be individually detected. Now, the way that we express the energy density of gravitational waves is in this parameter omega, the dimensionless quantity, which expresses the energy density of gravitational waves in a logarithmic bin of frequency and normalized with the energy density that makes the universe flat. Proceed. So now if you want to go and ride up, what would be the energy of gravitational waves from compact binary coalescence? This is the expression. Let me explain. This is the energy rate of gravitational waves from one event, which you consider at the frequency of the source. This is the merger rate. The commutative volume depends on the redshift in that way, and here you plug all the cosmology that you want. So what is very important here is what is the rate merger. And in the light of Vinko collaboration, this is calculated by adopting what is called a fiducial astrophysical model, which is going to tell you how many black holes I have of a given mass, what spin they're going to have. And I have been asking my astrophysicist colleague, why you take this model and not another one? And they said, well, we don't know which one. We take one for some astrophysical reasons, and what we expect is that the day that we're going to have a detection, we will know which is the correct one. And then if you want, let us try to see whether this is the case or not. So we consider about of 10,000 different astrophysical models, which have a kind of distribution of mass with this power law that you give here. And they have a beta distribution of spins, not just plus minus one that usually you take, the fiducial model. And we're going to calculate what is going to be the energy density of the gravitational waves background. And what we found is the change by almost orders of magnitude. And there comes what I said before. I'm afraid the people who came now missed my beautiful slide with the Swiss knife.
So I had to put it back.
I'm sorry, I have to, because the whole seminar is this thing.
So now, whoever comes after that, I don't repeat it.
So now I go back. I was very happy with this Swiss knife. So now let me go back. So here we are. So that means that the day I'm going to discover the stochastic background, and I know that this, I will not discuss now whether we know its cosmological astrophysical origin, I will be able to tell you what is the correct astrophysical model. And this is what I told you before. The laser waves can tell you something about astrophysics of compact objects. But then I told you as well that they can tell me something beyond the standard model of particle physics. So here is my cosmic strings kind of scenario. The universe expands, the temperature drops, it undergoes a series of phase transitions followed by spontaneous symmetry breaking and some kind of defects, relics of the previous more symmetric phase of the universe would exist. Among them, you have different good or bad ones. Among the good are the cosmic strings. So we have in the past studied in the context of supersymmetric theories how you go from a large-scale group down to the standard model. You study the homotopy group of the false vacuum, and we saw that these objects are very often there. The simple thing is the Abelian-Higgs model. When the U1 symmetry breaks down, you have that the field can go everywhere in a circle where only the radius is fixed, but the position can be anything you want. The symmetry is there. Now this thing, which can be like a wiring kind of string, they flexiate, they oscillate, they meet gravitational waves or other particles, depending on the particle physics model. So eventually they differ. Now, as they move, they cross, they exchange partners, and at the position that they exchange partners, they form what they call kinks, some discontinuities. In addition, we know that there are points on the strings that instantaneously it moves at the speed of light, which are called cusps. So here, I show you what is going to be the gravitational wave signal you will have in the case of the kink or in the case of the cusp. So I can go and play the same thing I did before. Okay, and I wrote down what would be the energy density of gravitational waves from compact binary mergers for the case of the cosmic strings. Forget this formula. What I would like to say is the following. Once you fix what is the distribution of your loops, how many loops you have of a given size, like for compact binary objects, how many black holes of a given size, then you can go and calculate the energy density of gravitational waves, okay, which will depend on one parameter. The tension of the strings, how heavy they are. How heavy they are corresponds to what we call it this G mu, the tension of the strings. G is the Newton's constant, mu is the linear mass density, which goes
like the square of the symmetry breaking energy. So here I show you an old simulation we did, which are Gotenambu strings. This abelian model I showed before, Gotenambu, so one-dimensional object. You have these very long ones, and you have a sea of very small loops. A non-detection of a stochastic background of gravitational waves from cosmic strings can put me a constraint on the G mu. In other words, a constraint on when the symmetry broke, a constraint on the DF. These are hybrid inflationary models that people have been using. So, constraints on beyond the standard model particle physics.
So you said non-detection.
Well, not detected so far. So the question then should be, how do you detect it? What are the constraints we have so far? So how do you try to detect a stochastic gravitational wave array?
Yes. So
is there a characteristic then that will distinguish it from, I think you showed a waveform there.
We know the waveform for Kasperkinds. It is not by the multi-lengthy paper of ages back.
Okay, so the characteristic of nature of that is
not. It's not.
And it's very distinctive.
It is distinctive.
So you could actually say that this is a cosmic string background.
Well, I will tell you in a second what is the difference that you have in the overall spectrum.
Okay.
Because what you ask me is how I can distinguish between astrophysical or cosmological. This is an open question. Ask me later and I tell you about it. So here it is. To the first approximation, the stochastic background is assumed to be isotropic. Same case like the CMB. So when you have the signal, it's going to have a noise, and it's going to have a strain, with a noise much bigger than the strain. So forget it. With one detector, there's no way you can detect. So what you have to do is to combine, to correlate the output of two detectors under the very reasonable assumption that the noise of the two detectors is uncorrelated, and the noise is uncorrelated with the strain, then you can go and find what would be the amplitude of a stochastic background of gravitational waves. So, in the majority of models that we have in mind, the frequency dependence on this parameter omega that I call the parameter of gravitational waves is a power law, with a different value of this power law. In the case of compact binaries, it takes the value 2/3. This you can easily see it by taking the quadruple formula of a binary system in a circular orbit, and then you will find those like nu to the minus 1/3, you integrate and you have the 2/3. So here, I show you the energy density of gravitational waves as a function of frequency. So you have these blue, orange, green lines that gives you the detectability the sensitivity of your instrument. So now we are somewhere between the green, the design sensibility, and the orange, a bit below orange, a bit far from the green, but anyway. So then you go and you calculate this omega, like for instance this purple line, and if it is tangent to one of these curves, you made the detection at the 2 sigma level. We have not detected, which means we can put an upper bound of the energy density of gravitational waves at the best sensitivity of our detector. Let me play.
Can you translate this omega in terms of strain?
Yes.
So what is the deeper orange line? What is the strain?
The orange line is the O1 and O2 sensitivity curve. So now we are in the O3 phase, so we are a bit below the orange. This plot here comes from the publication of Ligovic of the O2, and now the O3 will be something there, okay? So now I can play the same thing for the cosmic strings and put a constraint. So if I do this exercise, for the case of cosmic strings, with a very simple scaling analytical model, the same is for inflation, we can show that the density of this omega is independent of mu, so it is flat, okay? It is flat. So, which means that alpha is equal to zero. And then, a non-detection of gravitational waves tells me that omega is smaller than this quantity, which tells me that the tension of strings has to be smaller than 10 to the minus 14, which corresponds to the 10 to the 9 dV. Now, this is for the model that I have been discussing there. I don't want to go into details about strings, but if somebody wants, can ask me. Now, if you take into account what constraints we will be able to put with LISA and with Einstein telescope, which is the third generation interferometer. The equivalent in the States is the Cosmic Explorer. Then we'll be able to put a constraint smaller than 10 to the minus 17. And this, therefore, implies that there are implications for particle physics models that we have been using in order to build cosmological models. I don't care if cosmic strings exist or not, even though I spent years of my life working on that. I would be happy even to be more me to show that they do not exist. But the point is not if they exist or not. The point is if my theory predicts and they are not there, then something is fishy, something is wrong, something I can, or I have to complicate my particle physics model so these things are not there, but I have to do something. In addition, remember I promised that you can learn things beyond the lambda CDM model. So in a kind of LISA working group collaboration paper, which is a small subgroup of the whole LISA kind of consortium, we studied the dependence of the energy density of gravitational waves from strings on the thermal history of the universe. And you know, there are, you might consider weird proposals, but there are proposals that say that before the radiation-dominated era was a matter-dominated era. Well, or there was another consortium which goes under the name kination, which actually decayed faster than, I mean, radiated faster than radiation, so it was not important, and therefore doesn't change anything from observation we have about the universe. But actually, if this kind of constituent exists, depending on when it seems to be important, so what is the thermal history of the universe, it will affect the energy density of gravitational waves from strings. And equivalently, if I play with the number of degrees of freedom, and I take 100 more degrees of freedom for that exists in the standard model of particle physics, again, I have different kind of results. But I promise that I can tell you things as well about the large-scale stars. So, as you know, the cosmic microwave background, which, as I said, is the relic of the photons of the Big Bang, it has some small anisotropies, and actually all this goes to Planck's and Beer and this kind of collaborations, which goes to a part of 100,000. And actually, they can express in terms of this quantity CF, which gives you the angular kind of anisotropy you have at the scale pi over n. Okay? So, in other words, you can take. So, the temperature of the universe now is low, the universe is cold, it's about 10 to the minus 5 degrees Kelvin. But this is not the same everywhere. So, you take points in the sky with a given a kind of angular separation, which is given by this theta, and you take the average of that, okay? Then you can see what the degree of small anisotropies which you have, and this is the CF. Actually, yesterday I talked about that and the discrepancy which exists and so on. In the same way, the cosmic, the stochastic gravitational wave background can have as well small anisotropies which can be expressed at the same. So about a year and a half ago, before going there. So actually for these directional sets, LIGO Virgo is looking. So depending on whether the origin is astrophysical or cosmological, alpha equal to zero is cosmological, inflation, cosmic strings, two-thirds is compact binaries, and three goes for supernova, we don't detect it from supernova. You can have a different kind of CLs depending on how far you go. So just to give you an example, a very small L, okay, corresponds to a 10 degrees. So a very small L, where we are now, corresponds to what Kobe did at the very old years, okay? So you need a much better resolution to go to smaller angular scale. So this is what data tells. What else from a theoretical point of view we can say, okay? Can I go and calculate which will be the anisotropy that I will have from an anisotropic distribution of my sources? So we did that, now a year and a half ago with Alex. Alex Dendis is a third year PhD student of mine. So what we did is we considered a Friedman and Met Robertson working kind of universe with small kind of homogeneities that you might have. And then we remain in the linear approximation theory and we'll go to calculate the gravitational waves, which are emitted, okay, from a source around a solid atom, which is given by this sigma S that you can see. H tilde is the amplitude of gravitational waves in Fourier space. And I have an overdensity, you see? So I have this delta N, which is N minus the average number density of my sources. All the kind of quantities which depends on the model I have go to this parameter zeta. If, for instance, I have black holes, the zeta is the mass and the spin. If I have cosmic strings, the zeta is the tension of the spin, okay? Okay, eta is conformal time, A is the scale factor, I'm not going to go into detail. And then you do exactly the same thing that we have been doing for years, whether in this audience have been working with cosmological perturbations. You go and write the total energy density in terms of the monomer, in terms of a small kind of contribution. You go to take the two-point correlator, you're going to expand in Legendre polynomials, and the coefficient that you have there is the CL, which is exactly what people have been plotting to show the anisotropies in the case of the cosmic microwave background.
Yes.
Here, here. I have it up there.
Yeah. I mean, final things will depend very much.
Yeah, I have to calculate. Yeah, I can show you that. Yeah, this is big. I have to take that this such a kind of range that linear theory is still valid. And what I assume here, in this part, before I say something else, whatever I'm going to say here, I forget of any cosmological perturbation I have. I will go to that later on.
But still, I mean, this source is in some region, right?
Right.
So how large is that region?
It depends on what is the source that you take. This is a general thing, which you can apply afterwards if you want to black holes, you can apply to...
So this is an integral over the task light curve.
Yes. So when I will have afterwards, for instance, the location of these objects from a galaxy catalog, I can trace back on the history and to have the position of my sources.
So everything in the past. Like.
Everything is the past. Everything is the past. Okay. So then...
So can I just follow up? So I guess I'm confused about the... What are the... So, I mean, so you're looking at everything in the past,
no.
But it's all... I mean, it's... You're talking about the stochastic factor.
So for instance, I have binaries, okay, which are located in galaxies. So... They have an anisotropic distribution. I don't have the same. So these are going to give me a kind of imprint in the stochastic background I consider.
I see. Okay. So
you see what I mean? So the anisotropic distribution of my sources, I do not here, as I wrote up there, I forget any cosmological anisotropy I have. For instance, I will come to that later. Okay? So the Bardeen potential, the integrated Saxe-Wolff effect, all that here, I missed out. So now I have this formalism, and I can apply it to any source I want. So we applied it for the case of the cosmic strings. So here what we can find, okay? So what you see is the different colors correspond to different tension. And then what you can see is that the biggest contributions comes from the small scales, big values of L. It rises, then it reaches a plateau because it can be finite. It seems to be that the effect is stronger for smaller string tensions, which may be that I might have more luck to detect strings from anisotropies from the background.
Sorry, what is responsible for the anisotropy?
The anisotropic distribution of the string network that you had at the beginning.
So how do you know what is the...
I know that because I have simulations where they can tell me what is the distribution of strings I have. So this is taking my initial condition, which is given.
The initial condition is one that you mentioned before.
Exactly. This is my starting point. I have to give up. I have to know what's the distribution we check.
So you actually simulate and you get.
I have the network of my cosmic strings. I know how originally these objects are formed. Mm-hmm. Then I can simulate their evolution. Mm-hmm. And then I can see one equilibrium, I mean, you know, a scaling solution, as we call it, has been reached. I know. What is the distribution of resources? And this is my starting point.
And is there, you didn't compare there on that spectrum, say, a single field model?
I don't care about anything.
Oh, just to see where they
No. That's too complicated. I want to see one thing by the choice. And then okay. If I put extra things, then I don't know what I'm doing anymore. So I'm not minimalist. So then we try to do the same for the compact bindings. Because, of course, you would expect that these are going to give the most important thing. So you have the expiring, the merger, the rig down, okay? And then we say, if we are able to find where these sources are, and we can map them through a kind of an isotropic map, I can find the large-scale stars. Because these objects live in galaxies. And for me, this is very important. Well, for me, you know, this is too much to say for me. But what I want to say is that I always say that gravitational waves have to be used as a probe independent of the CMB. Otherwise, it's just another consistency check. We take the data there, we plug it here, of course, we find it. So it's a consistency, nothing else. So let us go outside of that. Of course, this is a big word to say, difficult to do. But the idea is, can we say something about the large-scale stars? So now the position, okay, of these objects are going to be given. So the position of the galaxies, within the galaxies I have to trace the star formation history and blah, 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 and see where these binary objects have been formed. We used the Millennium Catalog, which is the only public free catalog. It took, I always say that once I would be accused of having recorded now. But anyway, we waste about a couple of months waiting for a big collaboration to allow us to use their catalog, but they didn't. And took them 2 months to tell us no. So here you are. So here I have at the position of my galaxy, so I can do the machine that I told you before. And this is the first kind of anisotropic map of the stochastic background that we could give. So here is actually the fact that I have Poisson distributions. And then you might ask, before you told us that the astrophysical model will affect the background, what about here? So we took the 10,000 models I said before, and what we have found is a factor of one difference between the different models. So forget it. It's not going to affect, which goes the same like for the strings. The particular kind of model that you took is not going to affect what is going to happen at the end of the day. As model, I mean initial conditions, I don't mean gimme. This is the important kind of thing. Now, I told you before where the directional results of LIGO stand. So you might say, how good or bad are you? So here again, Alex made this plot. So you can see where a few orders of magnitude difference from what the constraints from directional searches like LIGO collaboration tell us, and what we expect that our theory is going to say. But not all hope is lost. Because you can see between the black and the black is the first observing run, the red is the second one, we gain an order of magnitude. So we might be very optimistic that we can gain more. Kagra is also into the game, can tell us more. But of course, as a theorist, we cannot wait for experimentalists to bridge this gap. It would be very nice, but we can wait forever. Life is short. So it has been recently a proposal, what if you do a cross-correlation with galaxy surveys? It has been a very interesting work, but actually all of them are these students at the Lawrence Institute in Leiden. And they had a very nice study with a very simple actually model, which now we combine with our more sophisticated approach to see whether we can bridge this gap. So you could say, fine, we'll be able to find the large scale structure. But of course, there is no free lunch. And then there is the problem that exists. And the problem is this kind, what I said, this Poisson statistics. In other words, the compact binaries, they live finite time within the observing time of your detector. So you are going to have what is called the shot noise. Which of all these kind of maps, where do I stop? Which one it gives me the anisotropies which are due to the anisotropic distribution of my sources? So you have this thing that I called a temporal shot noise that is going to come to your CL. It's going actually to become much more important contribution. So either you want to wait indefinitely, okay, to increase the observing time, which again is completely unrealistic, or you have to find another way to solve this problem. In addition, we have finite number of galaxies, and in addition, we have just one universe. So these are the standard kind of statistical effects we get. So we're a bit puzzled about that, until we realize that actually this short noise in the different kind of temporal segments that you consider is uncorrelated. So we propose in a recent paper and actually here is very good because Joe as well comes from LQC or LQG.
The bus group.
Okay, so you see, so there is an activity coming from quantum gravity work. And we propose a new way, a new correlator, which of course has not been tested yet from the collaboration, but it could actually save this problem. And before Abai had this interesting question, or actually, I don't know if you had the question, I thought you had the question, what about other kind of contributions? The universe is not homogeneous. And long ago, decades ago, I don't remember actually, I don't know when, but any astrophysicist that is here should know, I'm not going to know, you probably know, the Kaiser effect. Yeah. So Kaiser effect is projection effect. In other words, the universe is inhomogeneous. So the peculiar velocity is not going to be everywhere the same, depends if you have an overdensity or an underdensity. In addition, these things, they propagate in a background where the gravitational potential, what we call the Bardeen potential, is not the same. And the time evolution of the Bardeen potential along the trajectory of these gravitons is not the same. The integrated successive. What if we take all these things into account? So in a very simple, naive, unrealistic astrophysical model, we calculate the relative contribution of these terms, which I neglected before. And we found that depending on the frequency that you have, which means depending on what is going to be your 2-meter interferometer, it can give up to 10%. So now, with these bands, majority of Italian people, as I said, we try to do the same calculation. This formulas I gave you before. This formula is actually quite heavy. It's perturbation theory in synchronous gates, taking all these terms into account. I save you the details, and we want to see how these things may change. Okay. How am I doing with time? Great.
Just don't have about 8 minutes.
Eight.
I got nine.
Okay, but then I promise that slowly but steadily I will move to quantum gravity. I'm not there yet. Right? So now what I would like to say is that if you have any kind of modification of gravity in the ultraviolet or infrared regime, then you would expect that you are going to have difference in the formation of gravitational waves and the propagation. I don't consider the creation of gravitational. I just consider the propagation. So then, if you take modified gravity models, then you would expect that some kind of changes, for instance, in the dispersion relation, they might occur. And there has been a parameterized test of the propagation of gravitational waves. So you have this, this modification in the dispersion relation, you put an extra term, which you expect that this might give a frequency dependence on the speed of the gravity, okay? So this is a LIGO Virgo paper where what we did, so this parameter A can be positive, and in that case, it could be related to the massive gravity kind of models. And we took this alpha from 0 to 4 with steps of 0.5, which, as you see, this value corresponds to multifractal spacetime, the 3 to double special relativity, the 4 to Horaban-Lipschitz gravity, so on and so forth. So then, what you would expect is that when you take the amplitude of gravitational waves, the phase is going to have an extra contribution. Okay? And if you take the O1 and O2 data we had so far, you are able to put a constraint on the value of this parameter, but the most important is to put a constraint on the graviton mass that is 10 to the minus 23 electron volt.
So anyhow, yeah, you can think of propagation effects from source effects.
Yeah.
You're just assuming
there are no source effects. Yeah, this is the most conservative thing. Otherwise, you would have even stopped it. Okay?
So you just assume that there are no source effects. So without the source, what do you assume about it?
It is standard one.
Sorry?
if you don't have that, so what I want to see, so if I don't have this term, it's going to be the you know, mass equal to zero, the standard one. So I want to see how it's going to change if I consider.
So early time propagation.
Early time propagation. Yeah.
That's all you can say. Okay.
So you can take other
considerations. Whatever the source. Whatever the source.
Whatever the source. Now you can complicate the scenario, and there have been even stringest kinds of constraints, but depending on what you use. And then this is the thing of even more of motivating that. You know that we live in a currently accelerated expansion. The universe has many kinds of theories how models have contributed to scale that. One is this Hordensky, which takes all the class of scalar tensor kind of theories. Often these theories are plagued with a kind of negative energy mode, so we can discuss. So in order to solve them, they have been proposed this decost, degenerate higher order scalar tensor theories, which, believe it or not, they can be actually divided up to 41 classes, not asking that, but anyway, we can be many of them. So then the idea is that if you have standard GR and you take the propagation of gravitational waves in an FL adaptive ground for the two polarization modes, here it is what it is. This kind of graphic edge is Hubble in conformal time. Okay. If, however, you have a modified gravity, that's how this equation is going to look like. And then plus. And then you expect, with the data of gravitational waves, to put constraints in the mass of the graviton, in the speed of gravitational waves, and this quantity delta, which actually it comes to enrich the friction curve, and therefore is going to lead to an effect in the luminosity distance. So whenever you have a gravitational wave kind of detection, which is followed by an electromagnetic counterpart, like the binary neutron star, you would expect that you would be able to put some constraints in the kind of origin of this function. So how can you go to put to make a kind of phenomenological, a kind of modeling of this difference in the luminosity distance? This has been proposed in 2018 by a Geneva group, which comes in two quantities, this Xi and N. Xi equal to 1 in GR. So, in other words, when you are at redshift equal to 0, this becomes equal to unity. When the redshift goes very big, it becomes to a constant. In the between, you have a kind of power law. And then, within, again, another Lisa cosmology kind of group, we wanted to see which would be the forecast from LISA. Okay? So we did simulated galaxy catalogs for the sensitivity of LISA of black holes, which can range from 100 to 10 to the fifth solar masses. I forget all the details. And we were able at the end of the day to say that LISA would be able to put a constraint of psi at about 1%. And this constraint is big, is better than the constraint you can put at the equation of state, where you're going to have linear uncertainty, which comes from the cosmological parameters. I ran dramatically out of time, but given that the topic of this conference is quantum gravity, I will be allowed of 2 extra minutes. So here it is. Again. So slowly I approach and I start with the case of brass strings in extra dimensions, okay? So as you know, in all these brain scenarios, you can have the bulk within which you have brains of any dimensions. In the matter fields live in the brain, the gravity can go in the bulk. And therefore, in models like that, you would expect as well that you might have some waveform which leaks into the bulk, which implies that you are going to have a systematic overestimation of what will be the luminosity distance as inferred from the gravitational wave data. So here is what you are going to get from gravitational waves. Here is what you are going to get from the electromagnetic counterpart. D is the space-time dimensionality, RC is the screen radius, and M is, well, I don't remember how we call it, but these are 2 parameters of the string theory models. Steepness parameter, it came. So luckily, we had one kind of event with electromagnetic counterpart. And then it has been constrained. So all these shaded regions means that these are excluded out at 90% sensitivity, credibility, I'm sorry. So the results are constrained with a D equal to 4. And some models, like the Vali Cavadaggi-Porati model, is ruled out. I find quite fantastic that just with one event, I can come to these conclusions. No? Now, don't offend string theorists in the audience because they are not string theorists. So now, let me move to the very last part, which is more related to the conflict. So, let me be very fast. So, if you ask somebody whether gravitational waves can have something to do with quantum gravity, then of course the immediate answer will be forget it. Why forget it? Because you don't understand Higgs reduction. They are going to put some kind of corrections. They will be of that form, okay, which is completely out by the practice. But the whole story is not said because there can be no perturbative effects, and therefore it might be that you have an extra scale. So when you try to put these corrections, the corrections can be of that form. The algebraic sum can be zero, but you might not have these powers, these exponents to be always very small. So this happens to all theories where you have a dimensional flow, which means that you have a change of the space-time dimensionality. So let me assume, so let me say, not to misunderstand, not to be misunderstood. I don't advocate that what I'm going to say confirms any of these quantum gravity proposals. I'm just saying that there is the first study that we did, I don't know if another one, that attempts to make a link between these theories and quantum and gravitational wave theories. So let me assume, take it with a grain of salt, with a spoon of salt, with I don't know what you want, that somehow with the quantum gravity theory, I can reach the continuum limit, okay? And then this continuum limit, I can define gravitational waves and their propagation. Very good. So then I can write what is going to be my reaction, which is going to have effects from quantum gravity. They can be more than what I write here, okay, another grain of salt. So which are parameterized by the space-time measure, which tells me how the volume scales, then by the kinetic term, which will give a modification with the dispersion relation, and of course I have a generic source. This lambda star is the characteristic scale of the geometry, and this gamma is the scaling parameter, which I define in terms of the Hausdorff dimension, momentum space, and the spectral dimension. Then you can write what would be the amplitude of gravitational waves, which is the convolution of your generic source and the Green structure, which can take this form, this is dimensionless, and this goes like inversely proportional. So if I take radial coordinates and the local wave zone, this will take this form. And actually, if you take the modes H over L to the gamma, okay, then dimensionally and dynamically, this corresponds to a scalar field. So if I have gravity four dimension, this gamma becomes D over 2 minus 1, 1, which is the scaling of a scalar field. And now I can go and I take the variety of quantum gravity proposals where you know what would be the scale gamma. I have the gamma UV, where quantum gravity corrections are important, and the gamma mesoscopic, where the quantum gravity corrections cannot be negligible. And if you go to take the propagation of gravitational waves in the cosmological background, you get the same kind of equation I found before for the case of strings in extra dimensions. Which means I can play the same game that I did before to put a constraint. What is this small gamma? If there is only one fundamental scale, which is the Planck scale, this gamma is the gamma UV with the ones I gave you before. If not, then it's a mesoscopic scale, and this equation becomes only approximately correct. I'm almost done before you kill it. Okay. So then I can put constraints on these three parameters by data on the ratio between the two. using either the GW Latino HLT, the only one with the counterpart, or we have some similarity, relative to supermassive data from LISA. And again, don't misunderstand what I'm going to say. If you go to see what constraints you can put, you see for the gamma UV, there is no way you can put any constraint, which of course makes sense, because any kind of changes that you would have in your classical geometry will be at microscopic scales. They're not going to be an astrophysical kind of filter. If you go only to mesoscopic scales, then this is the only case where you can put a constraint. The constraint is this one, and the only theories that could be tested like that is group field theory, spin forms, or loop quantum gravity. I'm not saying that these are the theories which are the correct one. I repeat, not to have enemies. I'm just saying that these are the theories that possibly could be tested by this standard science. And then the next step that one has to do is to go to look for realistic quantum states, which are going to complete that. So I think I took a lot of your time. So this is what I said. This is what I didn't say. I could take even more time to say how you can learn about primordial black holes or actions that matter from the gravitational waves. I apologize for taking more. Thank you very much.
So halfway through the talk, I started to write down the concepts that were appearing on the slide. And so I want to congratulate Mary. This is the very first talk where I've heard, I've written down here a list, or Java leaf shifts, Kaiser effect, modified dispersion relation, shot noise, LQG, double special relativity, Horn-Desky.
Is there a question?
DGP.
Was it compliment or
hold on. DGP, standard siren, and Planck length. There's not a question, it's a remark, and this. We need more theorists like you.
I don't know whether I would be happy or stressed or crying. You see?
But we need more people that go all the way from the dirty shot noise effects of large scale structure to the Planck links. And so I'm congratulating you on the range of notions that you have studied and you have brought. So we need more people like you.
Any more questions?
Yeah. When you talk about in the last part about the GFT, what type of models are you?
All these models, the only thing that we want is the constraint that I put before between the mesoscopic scale and that's the only thing.
Okay.
I can show you how it's in the plot, but it doesn't very generic.
Just
the values of this gamma that you have, which are given, or we took them from the literature.
Okay, I can also have one of the first thoughts. So this whole story of leakage. Of course, there's just a standard astrophysics effect that competes, right? If you have an intergalactic magnetic field, then you will have a conversion of gravitational waves into electromagnetic waves. Now, I'm not sure what the
this was not taken into account at all. No.
Because that's just a standard classic
This was not taken into account. This is just this thing, and considering that just leaks to the back.
But I think that's an effect that you probably need to.
I don't know how it competes, if it's stronger or not. I think that if you take that into account, the constraint will be even stronger. So that's why I keep saying that this is the most conservative kind of thing. If you consider more effects, then you consider even more. But I think Ruth is excited to get quantum gravity.